Dunkirk conjures up images for many military buffs. It's also a new movie. Our film critic Harlan Jacobson has this review.
Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk concerns the events of May 27, June 4, 1940, when the bulk of the British Army in Europe, over 340,000 men, were encircled by the German army on the northern coast of France at Dunkirk, just east of Calais. Famously, the German army made a mistake during this period, allowing English forces the better part of a day to regroup and marshal a flotilla of small craft to come to the rescue across the English Channel, a bare 39 nautical miles, about 45 as the crow flies, from those white cliffs of Dover. Dunkirk is not a history lesson by Nolan. It drops us into a key moment in the history of World War II, certainly in the life of Britain, and the fate of the Allies, when an evacuation was pointedly not a victory, but a turning point nonetheless for having allowed the all of British forces to live to fight another day. It is Nolan's most linear film, though it weaves together three storylines that eventually intersect. The coherence of time is ordinarily of special interest in Nolan's films, from Memento, his audacious first film in 2000, in which the lead character, played by Guy Pearce, suffers from amnesia and must reconstruct his past timeline by leaving himself notes, to Interstellar 3 years ago, Nolan's meditative science fiction elegy, which stacked up time in overlapping layers that let lead Matthew McConaughey have a deeply satisfying and yet frustrating look forward at his daughter's life. Not unlike the way David Lean caught that moment in Dr. Zhivago of Yuri, seeing Lara from a bus he can't exit in time. I bring up David Lean because there's much about this film, and Nolan in general, that suggests the great director of Bridge on the River Kwai and Lawrence of Arabia. Nothing more so than Nolan's straining to show the big picture, literally and figuratively. Nolan isn't the only director to get financing for IMAX 70mm. Quentin Tarantino squeezed it out of Harvey Weinstein in pursuit of his relentlessly adolescent Hateful Eight. But Nolan is the only director worthy of it on artistic grounds. Dunkirk is a big picture, with key sequences filmed for the six-story-high IMAX 70mm format by cinematographer Hoyt van Hoytema, who also did Nolan's Interstellar. Dunkirk alternates the huge set pieces in the IMAX format, maybe to save a few bucks of the $150 to $200 million budget, with 35mm to underscore the compression surrounding these trapped characters. A young British soldier and a silent comrade with a secret, desperately trying to get on one of the few military transport ships lined up in Dunkirk's port, which the Luftwaffe returns to snatch away. A three-plane RAF detail, including Spitfire pilot Tom Hardy, driving the Luftwaffe into the drink before facing that inevitable choice to save himself or let God save the Queen. The air battles in Dunkirk are stellar.
You can practically see it from here.
What?
Home.
Mark Rylance is the knight exemplar of ordinary British family men who set forth from England in small craft to take the boys back across the Channel, and Kenneth Branagh, who looms like a dark cloud as the face of the British High Command, the officer class, fretting during the dire moments before the evacuation. Branagh is the go-to guy, I guess, for tears that well up but don't overflow their banks. Nolan, who also wrote and produced Dunkirk, doesn't lard the narrative with sappy side plots or characters, the way you think of big canvas films that Ben Affleck is in, Pearl Harbor, Argo, etc. It's 110 minutes fly by as the vice tightens around the encircled men, the bombs and the dogfights and the boats all racing to their meeting point. Dunkirk holds a mirror up to British mythology about its character.
The enemy tanks have stopped.
Why?
Why waste precious tanks when they can pick us off from the air like fish in a barrel?
There are 400,000 men on this beach.
coming back round.
He's coming back round!
Where are we going?
Dunkirk.
The evacuation was capped by Churchill's "We shall fight on the beaches" speech on June 4, perhaps the greatest stirred-the-blood speech since Pericles' orations to Athens. How fortuitous, then, that Dunkirk comes at the moment of Brexit. Yes. Both are about Britain leaving the continent, after all. Dunkirk is this perfectly crafted J.M.W. Turner canvas in grays and slate blues of British sea bravado in one era that addresses the nation's worry over its retreat from the Eurozone out the other. I don't know whether Nolan meant it as such. My guess is probably not. But there it is anyway. The opening crawl that sets the scene says, "The enemy surrounds British forces." Not the Germans, certainly not the Nazi armies. Nolan, the writer, and Emma Thomas, the lead producer and Nolan's wife, made the decision at some point not to tread too heavily on German sensibilities at this delicate moment when Germany is the bank and Britain is closing its account. Whether Nolan does so knowingly or by intuition, Dunkirk taps into the collective unconscious, as great artists often do. I say that even though there are moments when the sound design, not the characters' accents, swallows dialogue, which, in this "you are there as the gears of history turn" big tapestry film, is mostly beside the point. As I watch World War II films like Dunkirk, Saving Private Ryan, Fury, I think to myself, I don't know how they did it. Not the films, but the boys in the war. You watch the generations after. My generation of anti-war boomers, Gen X, the millennials, the metrosexuals, and it's like watching the tide recede forever. Who knows? Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe not. And I'm Harlan Jacobson.